Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the podcast powered by Hobbs. And hello again to another episode of the Bits and Pieces podcast. And today I am joined with Andrew Morrison. So say hi, Andrew.
Hi, Dave.
There you go. So obviously you're quite a well-known person in the bid industry. I think, and most people know who you are and your company and that. So I want to start off this conversation with you just touching on the fact that, you know, I think like 2 years ago or so, you got recognised as being a thought leader. And I've seen this a number of times throughout LinkedIn and people saying, you know, we do thought leadership and this sort of stuff. I just thought I'd throw the question out there because it might sound silly to a number of people, but what actually is thought, being a thought leader and a thought leadership?
Okay, that's a very good question, Dave. I think it's just being prepared to put yourself out there, to give your views, to in some ways try to lead the industry. One example of a way that I did this was by applying for a LinkedIn Live broadcasting license. I had felt that during the pandemic, we were all sort of locked in our houses and that there wasn't the same opportunity to get out and about and network and meet people and have interactions in the normal way. And I felt that video was very much the way to go. So I started by just posting like virgin videos, videos I created myself, just 2 or 3 minutes long, and putting them onto LinkedIn. And then that enabled me to then progress to applying for a LinkedIn Live broadcasting license. At that time, it wasn't something that everybody could get. You had to make a business case for it. And that was based on things like the number of connections you had, the number of videos you were doing, and whether people were actually watching these videos. I got the license in July 2020 and did the first of my LinkedIn Live broadcasts.
I mean, to me, that's really interesting because it is, you know, it's showing that there are people out there that sort of have got this story to tell. And I'm presuming your story is started off with the old AM Bid brand. Now you started that 10 years ago or so and recently sold it. So how did you develop AM Bid and what were you trying to do with that?
Yeah, well, I realized as I kind of progressed through my working life, bidding was actually my second career. I started off working in social housing. I had a social housing career for 12 years and almost stumbled into bidding where I was involved in procurement and was eventually headhunted to actually manage a service to do with housing. But very quickly, that private sector company wanted me to get involved in bidding. So that began my bidding career, which 9 years into the career, I decided that, you know, I really wanted to leave. By that time, it was British Gas, where I was managing most of their bidding function, and set up my own bidding business, AM Bid, which, as you've just said, Dave, was more or less 10 years ago just now, 2014. I started that business. I did start it, though, at the age of 47 with very much an eye on a future sale. So, and at that time, I don't think too many bidding businesses had necessarily been sold. And I thought, I really want to set something up that is able to work without me to some extent, has got an established client base, has got a staff team that have been well trained. And that's where membership of the professional body became very important, engaging with APMP, supporting it, going through the various sort of qualifications, getting involved in the conferences. And in fact, just, you know, going back to your earlier question about LinkedIn Live, very much the LinkedIn Live broadcasts were typically not to promote AM Bid. They were to actually share bidding best practice. And the most exciting one of these, you know, over 120 broadcasts was actually on the one of the APMP's global conferences during the pandemic, where I chaired a LinkedIn live broadcast that had people from the five different continents on it, big professionals, where we discussed the subject of public sector bidding there.
I mean, to be fair, right? I mean, I do a podcast and we get a few hundred listeners. I mean, it would scare the life out of me doing something on that scale where you're in a conference. I mean, you know, the APMP conferences, you know, especially like the American one, generally have, you know, between 300 for the UK, 400 for the UK, and over 1,500 for the American one. So to actually do that live, and especially when you're trying to pick up with five different time zones, effectively. I mean, I imagine that would have been a little bit of a challenge for you.
Yeah, we did have a dry run of it, which helped. And amazingly, on the day, on the actual conference, all of the technology worked. And even the different time zones, you know, the guy in the States was up at, you know, 3 a.m. or something like that to join. And the other side of the world, you know, the people stayed up very late at night. But, you know, people really that particular LinkedIn Live got lots of traction and several thousand views as well.
Would you say that was your sort of one major highlight of your career at AMBID?
I think there was many highlights, Dave. You know, I think, you know, probably professionally, AMBID being named the People Development of the Year, you know, winning the People Development of the Year award in 2019 at APMP's UK conference. That was a major highlight as well, because it recognised the kind of journey that the business, which at that point was 5 years old, had been through. You know, from a business that was started by me, who wasn't even a member of APMP, you know, back then, to within 5 years get to the stage that I think in the final we beat Telefonica O2 and WSP. So, you know, very... know, very well-known businesses with fantastic bid teams as well. So that was a particular highlight. But also seeing, you know, the development and growth of individual members within AP, you know, within AMBID, being recognised by APMP. So David Gray, for example, you know, being named Outstanding Leader in 2020 and going on to join the APMP's board. And he is, you know, the current chair worldwide this year, which is great, obviously. And we had a couple of people over the years got to the final of the Best Newcomer Awards. Also, we've had several people named in the APMP's global, you know, top 40 under 40. So it's just the fact that, you know, with the rising tide, all boats are lifted. And with the success of AMBID, it wasn't just my own personal success. It was the fact that it was working for our people and it was also working for our clients, because we were getting outstanding win rates also.
Yeah, I mean, I sort of get that, because obviously, you know, I'm from Hobson, so we're in a fairly similar field, although I think we're in different sectors, which is, yeah, probably why I can... So you've gone through this process, you started the company, and I remember when you started the company 9 years or so ago, 10 years ago, very new on the market, trying to be different, same way all, you know, same way we all have tried to do something a little bit different every now and again, and then you decide to sell it. So you know, what was the sort of the driving force behind that? How long did it take? Was it an easy process? Was it a painful process? No, did it go the way that you planned it? I mean, what was that sort of period like for you?
Yeah, well, I'd always planned to sell when the business was between eight and 10 years old. So we did sell in 8 years, 9 months. I never advertised the business for sale, but I did get four companies, you know, showing considerable interest, and three of them actually made offers. So it was a case then of me, you know, having to pick the right offer, which wasn't just the right offer financially, but it was the business that I felt was had the best plan for the people and for the business, and would look after our customers or clients. As to whether it's an easy thing to sell your business, I think the answer is no, it is not easy. Inevitably, you know, the only thing I could liken it to is perhaps selling your house. You know, you've got people that come in and look over your house and they're saying, well, I don't like this, and I'd rip that out and I would do this and whatever. And you might be sort of feeling a bit emotionally involved with your house because you've maybe lived there for many years and you've done some of the work that they're saying that they don't like or whatever. But I think your business is an even bigger thing. I felt that anyway, because obviously, I started the business from scratch and had built it up a kind of certain way as well. There was obviously the personalities involved of our staff team, but also of our clients. And then there's also wondering, well, you know, what's going to happen with all of this? And what happens to me next as well in terms of, you know, a kind of transition period, which the new owners had wanted a 12-month transition period, which actually fitted with my own expectations. So I did 6 months full-time, and then the back-end 6 months have just been on a consultancy basis as and when they've kind of needed me. I think the fact it was bought by a company called Bidding Limited, who also traded under the name HealthBid, they were very much bidding to the NHS. And so they were used to public sector bidding, but they wanted to get a multi-sector bid specialist business like AM Bid to help their own company growth. And I think that was part of one of the reasons that they felt that was that they felt quite a draft during the initial stages of the COVID-19 pandemic, when, you know, the NHS went into kind of emergency arrangements for procurement and there was very little of the normal procurement going on. And they felt that if they had a more diversified business, that they would have been better able to cope. And I think that was one of the reasons why they wanted to buy AM Bid. But they were also attracted by our digital offering, along with David Gray and Philip Thompson, the other directors. A couple of years ago, we actually launched Ultimate Tender Coach, which is a digital public sector bid training program. And Bidding Limited are very focused on digital tools. They're involved with AutoGen AI as well. And they felt that Ultimate Tender Coach would actually complement their digital offering also. So that was all sort of part of it. The transition, I would say, was pretty smooth. And the exit has similarly been smooth also.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose most people, when they, you know, sell a house or sell a property or sell a business or these, generally, you know, especially at sort of our advancing years, for want of a better phrase, would be almost used as a pension pot and it's moving on that way. But you've actually done something different in that you start in a new business, which I admire you for, or was admire you for, you know, that sort of stuff. So what is it you're actually doing now?
Yeah, so, I mean, now 10 years on, as it were, I'm 57 years of age, so I thought I was old starting a business at 47, but I'm even older now at 57, although I would say I've got 10 years more knowledge and experience of, you know, starting and growing a business. It was during the last couple of years that I've been going through the process of, you know, preparing AM Bid for sale, that I realised that it's quite a lonely place selling your business. It's something I'd never done before. Not only had I never started a business before, I'd never sold a business before. So I realised that I was picking up a lot of experience in the business sale. Part of the business sale is a due diligence process, and that tends to come after the initial negotiation around the selling price. And then there's a due diligence process, which is where you have to produce a lot of documents. Now, I was asked by the buyer's solicitors for about 600 documents. And again, during that process, you know, I was used to preparing bids and a lot of it in the public sector. So there was a lot of due diligence takes place within procurement. So I had a lot of these documents to hand. But nevertheless, even from my experience, it was still a lot of work. So I decided that this could be basically a new consultancy business I could start. And I just launched it yesterday. It's called Business Sale Basecamp. And the idea behind this is I'll be able to help essentially mentor business owners who are thinking about selling their business, to help them get ready practically to understand what's going to actually be involved in selling their business. It may also be that they've got to moderate their sale price expectations a little bit. Sometimes business owners have unrealistic expectations about what the market might be prepared to pay for their business, but also to help them mentally and emotionally with this journey, because the business for many business owners is a bit like you know having another child, a very needy child, a child that, you know, sort of in some cases stays like a baby for a very long time, needing lots and lots of your time and support. Business owners typically will be spending 40 to 80 hours a week on running their businesses. And they won't always know how to handle the negotiations, the due diligence, even manage the transition and the exit phase as well. So this is where I'm going to help them. And a bit like if you were to climb a mountain and get to a base camp, you've already climbed quite a lot of the mountain by the time you get to the base camp. And people who are getting the businesses ready for sale have already done a lot of the work to start and grow a business. But actually at the base camp, they're going to meet people who've been where they want to go, which is the top of the mountain. So I've successfully sold a business and successfully exited from it and successfully started another business. So I feel I'm in a good position to actually, you know, work with business owners, preparing them. So that's the whole concept of the Business Sale Basecamp. And if I identify in working with them that there's certain elements, it could be cybersecurity, it could be financial management, it could be succession planning, it could be lots of different things. But if I identify there's a particular gap, then within my network, I can potentially refer them to somebody who can help them plug that gap before they start thinking about taking their business to market.
It's intriguing to me because obviously I've never owned a business. You know, I've always worked for a company, and you never actually, I don't think you truly understand the mechanics around how businesses operate. We all, you know, I think we all get a glimpse of what it is, how it operates or how it runs. But I suppose when you're the level that you're at and that you're trying to, you know, sell a business, do the transition, exit, and this sort of stuff, and then crack on with it, I can understand that actually the stress and the well-being side of that being quite critical, because I suppose it'd be really easy to either completely lose faith, give up hope, or I suppose get bullied a little bit, I suppose, in some respects.
Yes, and I would say as well that, you know, during that period that you're considering selling your business and perhaps dealing with offers and negotiations, it's really important that your business performance doesn't dip during that period, because that would actually make your business less valuable. It can be, as I mentioned earlier, a kind of lonely place for the business owner, because they might not want to tell their staff. I was quite open, actually, with my staff. They all knew that at some point I was going to sell the business. In fact, one of the members of staff who'd worked with me for 5 years said when he finally heard about the business sale, he said, you know what, it's really good to know this now because we've always known it's coming, but we just didn't know when. So, but most business owners won't necessarily alert their staff to the fact that they are thinking about selling, because they might be worried that some key people could leave. They obviously won't tell their customers necessarily. If they alert the market too openly, then their competitors might start saying, oh, well, you don't want to go with them because they're just about to get sold. So for the business owner, managing the whole sale process, well, making sure that they keep their staff and clients on side and that business performance doesn't dip, this is again where getting a kind of experienced mentor can definitely help.
It's all, I suppose, in some respects, incredibly scary, but I mean, I think it's good that, you know, you're going down that route and actually helping, you know, do it yourself in jumping into that arena where you're saying, well, actually, I can make a business out of this. That's fair play to you. So obviously, there's been a transition for you because in some respects, you've gone from almost a poach to a gamekeeper mentality on it. What's the transition been like for you, you know, dealing with the difference in approach, I suppose?
Yes, I think there is a difference in approach, and perhaps my approach in growing AMBID was more traditional. So it was a company that we didn't really ever do very much advertising. It was very relationship-based, referral-based. I would go to certain, you know, along with the business, we would go to certain key conferences and exhibitions, particularly one that was held last week, actually, was the Social Housing Conference, because that's where my background was. We would also go to things in the procurement sector, in the energy sector, whereas the new owners, they're more of a digitally based approach. They're looking, you know, more for the business, not just to be a bid writing business, but also to be a software business. So it's a bit of a, what they call a SaaS business, you know, software as a service. That these, let's say, differences made for quite an interesting transition, because obviously the ways that I had been directing the business, the new business owners, just as if somebody buys your house, you know, they are fully entitled to do whatever they want, you know, to the property, completely remodel it, redecorate it, you know, take your garden up and put chips down if they want, do whatever they want, you know. So I've had to just manage my own emotions and not be too emotionally concerned about it, because actually what they've done is they have continued the growth journey of AMBID. So 1 year on, the turnover is up. I don't know the exact figure, but it's up, you know, a reasonably good amount, to certainly up by about the amount that we would have grown it by anyway, or maybe even more than that. So the business seems to still be on solid foundations. And although it's being done in a different way to the way I would have done it, that doesn't mean that way is wrong. It is just different.
Yeah, I think the sometimes the line between different, wrong, I wouldn't do it that way, but it's the right way to do it, is always a little bit blurry to some respects. It's always an interesting dynamic, I suppose.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, I think some of the team members, you know, have found it just a little bit different, but also a number of them have been promoted as well. So that's great. There's new bid directors. I think there's three new bid directors. So people's career development journey has actually continued, which is something that I'm obviously very pleased about.
So, now I'm going to come on to my favourite question, which is what I'm asking everybody on the podcast that's coming on. And I know when we talked about this the other day, you've got, I don't know which story you're going to go with, but I know you had a couple that you were chatting around. But I'm going to ask the killer question. what's your favourite live band and why?
Okay, well, I'll just very quickly give you both the answers that I gave you. So, way back 1995, so nearly 30 years ago, I was listening to Radio 1, as I usually did at that time, you know, on a Saturday afternoon. They were playing some new songs by new artists that were out. And one song I really liked, and then they said, this artist is going to be coming on a UK tour and you can buy tickets just now. And I got tickets for the Garage in Glasgow at that time. I think it was only 200 people that could get tickets to the live gig. So I bought 7 tickets and said to 6 of my friends, right, you're coming to this concert in 2 months' time with this young Canadian singer you've never heard of, Alanis Morissette. And by the time that we went to the concert 2 months later, she was world famous. And we had people offering us 50 quid outside in the street as we were queuing up to go in for tickets that had only cost £7.50. We didn't sell the tickets and it was a great gig. So that I really enjoyed. The biggest sort of regret concert-wise that I've got is that when I was 18, growing up in Scotland, a friend of mine said, I've got us a couple of tickets for Queen at Wembley, and do you want to come with me? And I backed out. I said, no, it just sounds a bit too big and too scary. Looking back, I obviously wish I had been there.
I can truly imagine. I mean, I saw Queen in the early 2000s, and they were amazing, to be fair. Alanis Morissette, I think that's a bucket list concert that I'd love to go to, so brilliant. Andrew, it's been a great pleasure hearing your story. And it's thought-provoking in a number of ways. And I think it's just a demonstration of, you know, if you apply yourself, you can actually achieve quite a lot, to be fair. So I think it's all kudos to you. And I hope your new venture goes well. I hope you get lots of people trying to sell their businesses and when they come and see it here. And I'll be watching you with great interest to see how it all develops. So thank you very much, sir.
Well, thank you, Dave, and please keep up these podcasts because they're really helpful to everybody working in their bidding as well.
Yeah, I mean, we're being very ambitious where we're going to be doing this weekly. So so far, so good, shall we say. So once again, Andrew, thanks a lot. Thanks for joining me. And then, I'll speak to everyone on the next one. Thanks a lot.